God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, "Let there be light." Because we believe we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ in his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. There's a saying, it's a good one, people are policy. Now, just think about this fact that if you write down policies, you could type them out as well as you like. You could make them eloquent and specific and precise and measurable and achievable, all of that. And then if you take them and you store them on a hard drive, they're ether. They don't matter. Likewise, if you print them out on beautiful, heavy stock paper and bind them and put a very nice cover on that, a thick leather cover, and stick them on a bookshelf, they don't matter. People are policy. And the people who run Joe Biden have hired a series of other people who are insane. They're insane. The man who pretends to be a woman who is running Health and Human Services is mentally ill. He believes he's a woman. Now, there are people who live that way happily, but they don't go about insisting that we must do this to children. That is wrong sex hormones and wrong sex surgeries. Sane people don't do that. They do not say that this is the only approach to what is a condition of the mind. Sane people don't. Nor do they obsess about doing it to street children, which is exactly what the man who pretends to be a woman in charge of our HHS does. And he brags about the money people can make doing it. Sane people don't do that. People are policy. And in the case of the White House, they've also hired a man who is a Satanist and, how could I say this very carefully, a libertine sexually, say it that way. He is in charge of our monkeypox response, though we're not to call it monkeypox anymore. In Mexico, where I was a few weeks ago, they're very open about how monkeypox spreads. It spreads when men have sex with men, largely. That's largely how it happens. And they're not shy about calling it monkeypox, although they do it in Spanish. I don't know that sane people can be Satanists. But then again, Satan can oppress people and inhabit people. One of the reasons that we are so, well, thankful to have the Holy Spirit, to have decided to serve Jesus Christ, to make him our Savior, and to act that way, is Satan cannot dwell in our bodies. He cannot coexist in our bodies with the kingdom of heaven. He can hassle us, he can oppress us, he can confuse us, he can distract us, but he can't embody us. People are policy. And in the case of the White House, they have a new person there. His name is Tyler Cherry. He's the new White House Associate Communications Director. Tyler is a fan of pretending that he's neither man nor woman. He's, of course, a man. He's a fan of dressing that way. He's a fan of having overly sexualized photos of himself spread around. It's the sort of photo that you would think of, well, someone doing if they have, say, a mental illness. He's going to be running communications or helping to do that as an assistant. Ethan Fishberger is a comms expert analyst. He's at IDF, Sergeant, works in New York Daily News, NBC News Think, National Review Online, Newsweek, Wall Street Journal. He tracked down some tweets by Tyler Cherry. Now, with respect, these are older tweets. Tyler Cherry makes that point. He wrote in January 26, 2017, "The right can't stand to see a fierce Muslim woman at the helm of the resistance and thus make up blank to smear her. I marched with Linda." He's talking about Linda Sarsour. Linda Sarsour is a noted and in the wrong circles, that is, the circles that admire anti-Semitism. Linda Sarsour is very admired. This is a man who wants the U.S. to halt all weapons sales to Israel. U.S. strongly supports UN's humanitarian work responding to Gaza crisis and extends condolences to families of eight UNWRA staff members killed. That came from Samantha Powers. Tyler Cherry wrote back. Ambassador Power and UNWRA yet continue to let Israeli forces restock their arsenals with U.S. ammunition and weapons. Now, reasonable people can disagree about policy, right? In 2014, Tyler Cherry wrote, cheersing in bars to ending the occupation of Palestine. No shame and, blank your glares. So this was in 2014. He was a younger person. He was, 10 years younger. And yet the images of him in dresses, pretending to be neither man nor woman, survive to this day. Well, they don't just survive. They're apparently being taken to this day. People are policy. Tyler Cherry has walked back his statements from when he's younger. He said, when I was a far younger man, I no longer think these things. I'm here to support the policy of the president. That's exactly what he's supposed to say. We have 330 million people in America. Half of them are men. In that case, half of those men, about three quarters of them, are above 18. Two quarters of that, another half, are below the age of 45. And this was the guy they picked to run communications. His qualification is his personality. His qualification is the fact that he pretends to be neither man nor woman. That appears to be his qualifications. And why would I say that? Because I'm going back to the pattern. The people this White House hires and promotes are not good at their jobs. The spokeslayer, KGP, is horrible at her job. In fact, there was a movement to oust her from being the press secretary. It couldn't happen because she is apparently black, whatever that means, and a woman, whatever that means, and same-sex attracted. People are policy. The policy of the White House is this. If you're on our side, you can do whatever you want. If you're on our side, you can go deface and vandalize monuments in Washington, D.C., and you're not going to get arrested. You can throw things at park police, and you're not going to get arrested, and if you are, you're not going to be tried. You can burn down or attempt to burn down one of the oldest churches, if not the oldest, in Washington, D.C., and not much is going to happen to you. They broadcast this by saying, look who we're putting in charge. Satanists, men who think they're women, and men like this who don't just think they're women, but have a need, at least 10 years ago, to fly off with expletives and to pretend that anti-Semites like Linda Sarsour are simply just proud and powerful Muslim women. The policy extends into what the people at the White House are willing to do to people who disagree with them. There are people who are fighting back, praise God. The Attorney General of Missouri has come up with a way to fight back against the lawfare being waged upon Americans by the people who run Joe Biden, Fox News reports. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey announced he's filing a lawsuit against the state of New York for what he called the direct attack on our democratic process through unconstitutional lawfare against President Trump. On Thursday, Bailey said on his podcast, The Bailey Wire, that his office would be taking steps to combat illicit prosecutions against the former president. Bailey said it's time to restore the rule of law. Quote, radical progressives in New York are trying to rig the 2024 election. We have to stand up and fight back. We have to fight back against a rogue prosecutor who's trying to take a presidential candidate off the campaign trail. This is a smart move, and it has to be able to be repeated across the country. This is election interference, and everybody knows it's election interference. Everybody knows the goal is to keep the president off the campaign trail. In fact, they've now extended the gag order against Donald Trump. While on the campaign trail, he can't critique the case against him. He's not supposed to critique the judge in the case. The case has been settled. He was found guilty of 34 felonies manufactured out of thin air. Oh, by the way, over the weekend, the Supreme Court ruled that in the case of a jury deliberation, the jury must return a unanimous verdict, 12-0. In the case in New York, it was unanimous, except the corrupt judge said that the jury didn't all have to pick the same charge with which to convict the president. So the actual jury count was 4-4-4, split three ways between three crimes. That's not going to stand. Supreme Court already said, you don't get to do that. People are policy. There's a reason that the judges have been chosen. In the case of New York, there's a reason that they went to that district. There's a reason they chose that prosecutor. There's a reason they chose that judge in that courtroom and that area of the world. Because all of those people, statistically speaking, hate Donald Trump. People are policy. And one of the policies of the people who run Joe Biden is to insist that our weather is out to kill us, that our weather is being weaponized against us. You'll either believe in climate change or they'll manufacture as many natural disasters as you need to believe it.
Cloud seeding is something that I studied in school for meteorology, weather modification. Mm-hmm. Back when I went to school, it was like, I've poo-pooed a little bit. It was too expensive. It's not efficient enough. Well, guess what? When you get desperate and then technology gets better, 20 years later, here we are. Cloud seeding is ramping up so big. You see me there showing that flare on the plane. They send silver iodide into the clouds, and then it makes it snow more.
Oh, wow.
So they can't make a cloud, right? But they're taking storms that are already there and then giving it a little boost.
Giving it a little boost. That was from The View. Yeah, one of the kind ladies in The View invited on a meteorologist to talk about the process of seeding the weather. But wait a minute, I was told that never happened. I was told that did not occur. The people who run Joe Biden are the same people who want to run the world. They have the same policies. If you're with us, you can do anything you like. If you're against us, you cannot. Case in point. The war on water continues in the state of Idaho. They're not backing off. The bureaucrats continue to insist that 6,000 people, including in a huge number of ranches that are creating food for Americans, can no longer have water. The reservoirs are full. The drought has been over for a good long while. The charge, as I understand it, for ranchers who violate this is $30,000 a day. You can have your land, but it has to go back to being sand. I explained this last week. They gave us the signal about a year ago, the people at the World Economic Forum, that they intend to turn water into a commodity like oil. They intend to own it. Just as they do with carbon dioxide, they intend to own it and sell it back to us. Carbon dioxide is needed to produce plants. Water is needed to produce plants. They intend to have corporate farming be the only way you get food, and they intend for it to be fake food, as distanced as possible from what God made, because they themselves want to be gods, which brings us back to people or policy. It is not a mistake, nor is it a happenstance, that some of the people the White House are hiring have disavowed God. Well, and they've gone a step further. They've embraced Satan. It's not a mistake. It's simply a widening of the Overton window. You notice the Mockingbird media never talks about Satanists being hired, but they panic if a Supreme Court justice expresses allegiance to God. We'll come back with some good news. Strong men being brave and courageous after the Bible. I'm Todd Herman. This is The Disciples View. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. I count it as good news that young men are being brave and courageous, inspired by the Bible. I had an opportunity to talk with two young men last week who fight against sex trafficking in different realms. I want you to hear parts of these conversations. This is a conversation I had with Nate Lewis, part of it, founder and CEO of Innocence Rescue Mission. And he came into my podcast studio and we talked for over an hour about how he helps law enforcement fight sex trafficking. And I was shocked to hear, I guess I shouldn't have been, but I was, that it's small towns where the sex traffickers really like to operate. I encourage you to go get the whole interview. Go to video.thetoddhermanshow.com. Get a 7-day free trial for my video podcast and make this one of the programs you watch. Nate Lewis, founder and CEO of Innocence Rescue Mission. If I'm not mistaken, the United States is becoming a, quote, good place to traffic kids, given what's going on in our cities, the decision not to enforce laws, to, like in Seattle, there are areas, any cop will tell you, go roll with a cop. That's a cartel area. This is the Chinese cartel. This is the Ecuadorian cartels, right? The Hondurans kind of run the drug trade on Capitol Hill. They'll all tell you this. So let's start with the economics and then the fact of sex trafficking in America.
Yeah, well, it's the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world due to the fact that it's extremely profitable. You're looking at, as a business, investment, sell, invest again, sell, invest again. Where in trafficking, you invest, maybe if you do invest to a human being,
then you're just stealing a human being.
Right? Opposed to like kidnapping or falsely grooming them into a lifestyle that they are now involved in and getting them addicted to drugs. There's a whole gamut of things. But essentially, you're not really investing every month or week or day or whatever it is. And it's just 100% return on profit. An average trafficker makes about $250,000 a year off of one trafficking.
So one human being, one soul, $250,000 a year in profit.
Yeah, that's what they're making off of them.
So that's clear of the minimal costs that they keep to if they have them in captivity to feed them. And I assume it's more profitable to not have them in captivity, have their mom and dad feed them. You just traffic them on the side.
Yeah, I mean, they tour around. It's like being on a concert tour. They just tour the U.S. on the circuit. And they go from town to town. There's all these sites. This is when we get into what we do.
Yeah.
It's really cool. Like, there's a lot of sites that people don't know about. There's the dark web, which people are aware of. And then there's the light web, which we are all on, most people on social media and apps and stuff like that. But in the dark web, there are many apps out there. There's many places that are just to sell sex. And they claim that you have to be 19. You click a box.
Proof.
Yeah, whoa. Yeah,
no seven-year-old can click a box. Yeah.
And so there's these sites, you know, that we are actively on and we engage in through different forms. And it's happening, man. They're selling it right here where we live.
North Idaho. High mountains of free America.
Yeah. We did our first undercover operation online. And we do what we call like an ad. So you post like, hey, I'm advertising my product on the site, right? Within 5 days, we had 250 people interested in this area. Mostly were coming from across the state line. They wanted to come across the state line.
Five days, 250 people.
Well, listen to this. So the second time we did it, within 10 minutes, we had four buyers. And you're talking about 14 years old.
So you're advertising the selling of a 14-year-old's body for men to carry out their lustly, fleshly, sinful desires. And that quick, there's men that actively searching for this.
Oh, very quick. Very quick. You're talking within 24 hours, 60 people. Here's what's even more mind-blowing. And some of this has already got leaked out into the press. And we're trying to not let it get leaked out because we don't want people to know. But obviously, it's kind of a little late and we're here now too. But we did an 11-year-old recently.
So when you did an 11-year-old, you advertised an 11-year-old person for sale.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
We advertised anyway. And so I was kind of debating with my team, like, is that too young, this and that? And we're like, whatever. They're going to come back anyways next week to the 14-year-old. And we did. And it blew my mind. And let me just tell you this. I think this is important for the audience to know, too. I've been doing this for years, mostly international, and I've seen some insane stuff. The acid stuff, one of my friends that I'm now friends with, I've seen a lot of insane things. I knew it was happening in the United States, but I can't tell you how often I'm shocked here in the United States. My hometown, less than 50,000 people, we did the same ad. Within 24 hours, we had 55 different buyers of a 14-year-old. these are the type of things that are shocking to me. 11-year-old where people are reaching out and showing up and getting arrested. But to me, even my mind couldn't really comprehend, like, really? This is happening this prevalent right here in our town. In our town, it's happening. And you know what also is blowing my mind? And you can see these every week. Yesterday, there was another one that came out. These guys who are successful bankers, doctors, real estate agents, whatever, they're getting caught. They're not the kids in the park with the backpack selling meth. You know, these are successful people. You know how much it costs for 30 minutes with an 11-year-old?
Praise God, I have no idea.
Yeah, $250.
$250 yeah, people for half an hour.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what it costs overnight? $1,000.
Overnight.
Yeah, and we had a guy who wanted 2 11-year-olds overnight for $2,000. He's a single guy, not married, no kids, with the pool at his house. He's going to have fun. He's going to get him drunk. And he even says, "You won't. Don't worry, you won't remember what's going to happen." $2,000. So do you think that this is like some poor person's addiction?
No. No. Like sin knows no bounds. Right. Mm-hmm. On the righteous side of thing, God rains down the common blessings on the evil and the good, so-called good, no notice for good. But no, I don't. And here's what's so remarkable to me as I hear you tell this story. There are people who would tell you, oh, there's no big rings of sex traffickers. There's no, I'm sorry. Oh, if you have, I mean, let's, if you have billions of dollars and you've fallen into what I think is porn, I definitely think this is demonic. And porn is giving you this insane sexual appetite that now there's no bottom, nothing's extreme enough. And you've got $1 billion, why would you not create a ring? And why would you not, you know, get your own kids? You're a business person. Why are you continuing to rent kids when you can own kids? So no, I don't think it's a poor person's thing. I didn't know about the economics. And in a small town, you would, I would think, this is a small town. If I'm going to go do this, maybe I should arrange a business trip or a hunting trip or something.
Oh, that happens too.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I think what's important to know about the small towns is that there's no risk.
So what do you mean?
There's no risk in a small town. So an average large town like Seattle, Los Angeles, Chicago, Dallas, something like that, they might have a task force with at least one or two or maybe five people maybe dedicated to these child crimes.
Yeah.
In small towns, they have 7 drug task force officers, but 0 child crimes officers. So where are you going to spend your time as a criminal? Selling drugs? When it's more lucrative to have another form of business, and there's no risk. So that's the other thing. Well, we don't really want the press to know about it because we don't want them to know that there's risk because they're sloppy when they don't think there's risk.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is how do we create risk? And I've seen this. We know when we used to go into tourist island towns and we'd dismantle them and it would leak out across the entire island. 21 guys arrested, 42 girls rescued, blah, 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 whatever it was. For about 6 months, you couldn't find somebody to have sex with there on that island, right? I mean, it was like, I'm not going to prison for the rest of my life, right? So it actually created risk too. So there's that component in peace too. But for us, you know, we can get into the mechanics of what we actually do, but we're trying to, one, create risk, but we're trying to put away these guys and not just arrest guys, but we're trying to build solid cases because what's really important in law enforcement is the conviction rate.
Yeah.
Right. And then the length of sentencing, because if you arrest a guy, but your case sucks and they walk out with a misdemeanor or slap on the wrist or 2 months probation, that's a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah.
And the guy's right back out on the street.
Right. Well, and then you have insane places like I call it the separate country of Washington or California, where they'll slap on the wrist guys like that. But I mean, and we'll talk about this, I hope, they are normalizing grooming to a degree. I talked to one of your colleagues who did Crime Stoppers International. And Jim told me, yeah, that the pornographic sex ed they're doing, you better believe that's a groomer's dream because it normalizes that. So what do you actually do? I mean, there's a lot to this, but what do you actually do?
Yeah, so we have a 3-tier approach. So we protect and preserve the innocence of children from sex trafficking, online exploitation, and sexual abuse. Okay. And so those are the 3 angles. Everyone knows now, or seems to be, that everybody knows and wants to talk about trafficking. And so we focus on that. That's more of an organized crime piece and component. But how we work is we train and equip law enforcement with the tools that they need to go out and the techniques and tactics. Awesome. With state-of-the-art technology that we have developed that I can't talk about publicly. But how it works is we figure, how do we teach people, a department, how to fish and give them the equipment to fish and let them go fish, and then we can move on and they can continue to fish. And that's how we're going to scale this. So essentially, we're doing online investigations. We're meeting the department wherever they are. If they've started doing this, they just don't know like specific chat, what sites and how to create these accounts and blah, blah, blah. We can come in, give them all the equipment they need. Some of this equipment is very expensive equipment. So we can go in there and get them up to speed or get them more efficient and more effective. And if they're already doing this and they want to get more into the organized crime part of it, which is following the money, then we can bring them up to speed wherever they are in their journey as far as building a team or a task force or a couple detectives or whatever it is. And so that's what we do. And all my team is active duty law enforcement. We have a guy who's with a federal agency as well. And so they're all active duty, which is really cool because they can write search warrants. They can arrest people.
That's a cool trick,
You know? And right. So, and that's what we want to do. And I think it's important also for everybody to know is that this year alone, there'll be about 360,000 children that are sexually abused, right? Yeah. They're not all trafficked, but there's a lot of sexual abuse. And I want to go back to what you were talking about with the porn industry and all that stuff. So what we're really good at doing is identifying patterns of life and watching the behavior of a human, where they start, and what does it lead to, and where does it go from there, right? So if you understand where a human may be downloading, trading child porn, eventually that addiction, which, you know, the entry level might for drugs is maybe marijuana or whatever, prescription drugs, eventually leads to heroin or meth or whatever it may be. But porn is the kind of marijuana stage in a sense, to where the dopamine hits eventually aren't hitting, and then they have to go younger, and then they have to actually go to physical abuse. And that physical abuse usually tends to at first go to, well, I'll just go pay for it, right? And then, and maybe not always, I'm just giving you some scenarios. Also, it can just go to like, well, why am I paying for it right now? Like, this girl happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And there's a case right here locally in this, actually not far from here, where, you know, they caught a guy on my team caught a guy for having a lot of child porn. And in that first little while, this is an interesting psychological part of all this, but in that first moment, they're addicted like an alcoholic to alcohol, right? Like, or to a drug. Yeah. And they hide it from their family. They hide it from everybody. They know that they're a closet sexaholic or child pornaholic. They've tried cold turkey. They've done all these things. And then now they've been arrested. And in that first little window, they're like, oh, at first they don't understand the reality of what's about to happen. They're like, finally, I'm going to finish and quit this addiction. My wife's going to know. My kids are going to know. My work's going to know. I'm going to get rid of it, right? So they're in a weird spot until they realize they're about to go to jail for a long time. But in that window, my team member asked, have you ever physically abused a child? And he was like, well, there was this one time. I was helping a friend of a friend build a deck, and it was muddy, and they didn't want me going inside to use the bathroom, so I said, use the RV. Well, they had his kids were there, and the kids' friends were there, and I go into the trailer, and this cute little girl happened to be in there while I was in there, and my addiction came over me, and so it overcame me. And so if we can intervene before he ever would have even been in that trailer to get to that girl, that's where we want to be. Or we want to get there before his 117th victim. And the reason I use that number is because on average, one of these perpetrators will abuse 117 victims in their lifetime.
There are people watching and are listening who've been abused. Mm-hmm. And God loves you. And you didn't do anything wrong. And he can rescue you. And that doesn't define who you are. Not at all. And talking about it, being with people who've been through it and processing it, you can. And God, believe it or not, can use that pain for good.
Amen.
Right?
For sure.
Right? So that could verge into like a thought crime thing you're describing, but I get where you're going in this trajectory. So you can actually get in front of a guy and his decision to cross that line. Have you actually successfully gotten in front of a guy and said, like, you're going to stop because child porn is illegal. Images of kids being raped is illegal. So you've actually gotten ahead of the decision someone might have made to go change a kid's life.
Potentially, yeah. We're in a case right now where, well, actually there are a couple of cases right now where we arrested a guy who showed up to have sex with a little child who has children, girls living in his home.
Good God.
Stepchildren or soon to be stepchildren. And when the fiance or wife finds out that he went to meet up with a 12-year-old and they have an 11-year-old and a 9-year-old at home, she flips her lid.
Yeah.
And so then, unfortunately, we have to do an interview with the mom and with the children. And it's said that 13 is usually when they come out. And a young child doesn't know that, oh, is this wrong? Being raped by my stepdad or whatever, is this wrong? They don't know. And how he went about it, who knows how that process worked until they discover, they're like, you know what? That was wrong.
Well, right. And there's that, I've talked to people who've, you know, been raised in those circumstances, and there's this gut feeling that it's wrong. But then that gets confused with, well, I don't like it when my mom tells me to mow the lawn, and I don't like it when I have to do homework. And so maybe this is just another like circumstances. Maybe this is the thing a kid has to go through. Right. I've talked to kids because of the thing we went through with our family.
Again, that was a conversation between myself and Nate Lewis, the founder and CEO of Innocence Rescue Mission. You can get the whole interview on any of the audio podcasting platforms. Just search for The Todd Herman Show. Find the guy with the gray beard. I used to have one, recently shaved it. We'll come back with the Tower Battle. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View on AFR. Appreciate you supporting AFR, the network. Your monthly support allows us to speak the word of God in news, to put God at the center of news, and to talk to, as you just heard, godly young men going out and fighting against the evils of sex trafficking. I'll have another interview for you coming up Thursday with Caleb Altemeyer, and he works to rescue hostages, people who are right now held hostage in sex trafficking. The Epoch Times did a great job of going through the remaining decisions to come down from the Supreme Court this year. Number one is on federal power. It's called the Chevron Doctrine, and this was a doctrine that gave courts guidance that they should respect the so-called, I would call them bureaucratic agencies, that they have expertise in certain areas and they should be respected, and that they've been given the power by Congress to administer law. That move, by the way, was one of the most disastrous things that's ever happened in this country. Congress should take that back. They won't, because they like to be able to blame the EPA and other groups, the Department of Education, for instance. This case is about limiting the degree to which unelected officials can simply decree a thing to be law and then enforce it, because you've seen, watch, it's now going to be enforceable by law that men are women. It's already enforceable by law. It's a lie, and it cannot be allowed to stand. The immunity case around President Trump and the election, his speech at the Capitol, wherein corrupt and unconstitutionally provisioned prosecutor Jack Smith is trying the president for fomenting an insurrection, except he's not. He is not charging the president with starting an insurrection. He's charging with all the things around that, because Jack Smith, though corrupt, knows he can't prove that case. So is the Supreme Court going to say that presidents have immunity from things they say while in office? If not, look forward to every president eventually being taken to court and prosecuted in this way. In other words, the full and complete downfall of America. As if it's not extraordinary circumstances, we should not be playing this game where we go out and use lawfare against the political opponents of our political enemies, or our political enemies, as it were. Another case in the Supreme Court. Can the government convince social media companies to ban users or to de-emphasize their posts? This is important, because the zeal for censorship has nothing in common with being a democratic republic. This can't be allowed to stand. Now, in my judgment, I just simply don't trust the John Roberts court on this. Although they've done some good things on free speech lately. They did rule that banks, that the government cannot pressure banks into debanking groups because of their speech, like the NRA. That was a unanimous decision, so maybe this is going to go the right way. There's another abortion case. Although the Supreme Court's already ruled on a challenge to the Food and Drug Administration's approval of abortion-related drugs, this case is about in Idaho. It's the 2022 Idaho Defense of Law Act, and it bans abortion under all circumstances unless it is necessary to prevent the death of a pregnant woman. So this is now before the Supreme Court. Of course, the people who run Joe Biden want abortion to be more common, not less common. There's other issues before the courts, social media issues. Can the Florida government ban social media companies from de-emphasizing the posts of people or banning people based upon their political views? That's an important one going before the court as well. Don't know how they're going to rule on that. I'm guessing against it, but we'll see. And then the January 6th obstruction case. This is important because it's the extension of a rule that was meant to be about financial crimes. It came about at the end of the Enron case. Prosecutors are using a rule created to punish people who destroyed written evidence, to put people in prison for 3 years or longer, sometimes in solitary confinement, sometimes without charges, without any court hearing for 3 years, for walking through the Capitol. Yes, there are people who committed vandalism. There are people who beat cops, and they should be punished for that. But no one should be in prison based upon a law that was about tearing up or destroying paper evidence that's been turned into a felony of walking around while wearing a Trump hat. A little hyperbolic at the end. That wasn't necessarily the charge, the Trump hat. It was that they believed President Trump's claim that the elections were stolen, as do I. Debate anyone on it. I know they were rigged. I believe they were stolen. Bill Maher. Conservatives are always seeking someone from Hollywood who makes sense. Bill Maher doesn't often make sense, but when he's right, he's right. And he absolutely drove his otherwise clapping on notice, clapping on order audience into some silence when he talked about the case in New York against President Trump. The 34 made-up felonies. He was talking with Andrew and Chris Cuomo.
The trial in New York, the one he got convicted for, was the greatest fundraising bonanza ever. He was lagging behind Biden, and now he's pulled quite a bit ahead. That trial was the greatest reason people had to send their checks for $5, $10, $25, whatever dollars to Donald Trump. So yeah. I was always with you on the one in New York, the hush money trial. I don't think they should have brought that one. It was just always going to look like a sex case, and people were always just going to look at it that way. So anyway.
That case, the Attorney General's case in New York, frankly, should have never been brought. And if his name was not Donald Trump, and if he wasn't running for president, I'm the former AG in New York, I'm telling you that case would have never been brought. And that's what is offensive to people. And it should be, because if there's anything left, it's belief in the justice system.
Is there really left belief in the justice system? I think belief in some judges is left, thank God. But an overall belief in the justice system, I can't agree with that. Chris Cuomo or Andy Cuomo. Can't tell the brothers apart when I'm listening on audio. On this program, we actually thank the Lord for placing the supposedly wise people, like the Cuomos, on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature cult, the Tower of Babel.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
Culture is a reflection of our moment and our time. And present culture is the way we express how we're feeling about the moment.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites that attempt, or at least they're my attempt, to prove my theory about God, using these people to show what human wisdom is like versus what godly wisdom is like. Cammie Harris. We're supposed to call her Vice President Harris. She says a lot of things. And after all, as we talked about in the beginning of the program, people are policy.
People stand together. when we use our collective voice, when we stand in solidarity, we can drive extraordinary change, because it is we who stand together as the collective who have the power and the ability to see what can be, unburdened by what has been.
It's an amazing collection of optimistic, soaring words that then circle back on themselves to say, wait, did you just say that we should work together? I think that's exactly what you just did. Next soundbite in today's Tower of Babbling.
They can remain together as a whole family here in this country as a result of this executive order. Those are the things that matter most. And those are the ways in which President Biden continues to fight for, communities across this country that, really deserve the opportunity that we know is so important in this election.
Just to explain, she's talking about communities being standing together, kids staying with their families. So is Julie Chavez Rodriguez, who is a campaign manager for the figurehead, is she talking about now confronting California and saying, no, you can't rip kids out of their homes because their parents won't pretend girls are boys? Nope. Maybe she's talking about homeschooling, where the Biden administration is going to stand by homeschoolers instead of kicking them out of the country like they did a family that moved here from Germany seeking solace because they were being persecuted for homeschooling their children. No, she's talking about illegal immigrants. She's talking about granting amnesty to huge numbers of illegal immigrants, so of course they can more legally vote. But yes, it's about keeping families together. This is from the same administration who's well aware of the fact that kids are being trafficked over, across, and through our southern border, sometimes under it. They're being trafficked into our country to live as slaves. That's not keeping families together. Last soundbite in today's Tower of Babbling. Janet Yellen. Some people continue to think that she has an expertise in finance.
But he keeps saying it was 9% when he took office. You know that was not the case. Have you ever tried to pull him aside and say, Mr. President, just so you know, inflation was not that high when you took office?
Well, inflation hit 9% at its peak.
16 months after he took office.
That was due to inflation was lower before the pandemic. That's absolutely true.
No, inflation was lower before you guys decided to install the lockdowns in order to change society, in order to more dramatically split society into the good people who wore the masks because people said to, who got injected because people said to, who stayed home and stayed safe because people said to, and bad people who used common sense and did things like watch Tony Fauci not wear masks when he didn't think he was being watched, who did things like paid attention to the fact that the injections never went through any form of safety testing, who used their own common sense to say, wait, you want me to inject my kids with a substance that's going to cause their body to produce a poison? No, that's a bad idea. So, yeah, inflation went up when you guys did what you planned to do anyway. Want to know why you did it? Well, in my judgment, it's because BlackRock said we need to find a way to inject $720 billion into the economy. We need to do that now. And so you did it the first chance you had with the first excuse you had. And that's a wrap for today's Tower of Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time. And I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
On this program, we often wrap up the day with a personal observation from me. And it is just the thing that we're going to do today, a personal observation. I had an occasion to once again have myself instructed in the way of living through prayer. There's been times where God has said to me during prayer things like, my son, I see you in pain. There's been extraordinary moments. I think that many of us live for those moments. Recently, I've really been struggling I've really been wrestling with the topics, I guess, of getting older and thinking about what that means for myself in these later ages. And I was looking at the Bible for some guidance, and I found myself so often, as I'm so often, drawn into the stories of King David and what he did and the facts of his life. And I found myself reading about David and Absalom, about the son who sought to destroy the father's kingdom, that son who had just become, well, had just allowed evil to work through him. And as I read that, I found myself with this great admiration for David and how David, even in the midst of that, wanted mercy for his son. I then went and read the words of King Solomon, the wisest man in the world, that was said, and his words to his son about adultery and about adulteresses. And as I read that, a great admiration for the wisdom of Solomon. And then I think the enemy got to work on me. Well, David and Bathsheba? David and his concubine? David, who instead of standing brave and strong, pretended to be insane? And Solomon writing those words to his son in the midst of having how many wives and concubines? Hypocrites. And it bothered me for, well, a couple of days. Then I remembered this. They're not our model. I mean, we're reading about their interactions with God, but they're not the story. God is the story. God did not change. Those men were not perfect. We awaited the arrival of the only perfect man. And it is only Jesus who can serve as our model. Because we could take the Apostle Paul later in life, who was once Saul murdering Christians. Is he our model? He himself said, pray, no. Don't you dare let me be your model. It's not the church of Paul or the church of Peter. It's the church of Christ. And so I reminded myself, you were looking at the wrong protagonist in those stories. Get your head right. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. Until God decides you and I can speak again together, may His peace wash over you. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been The Disciples View.